Intertextual Cardboard Experience.
Hello and welcome to Intertextual Cardboard Experience. This is going to be season something, if my podcast thing allows me to have it be a season zero. It'll be season zero, episode one, or something like that. But you're going to be kind of just stuck with me for a little bit. So if you listen to that yearly reflection episode, which was a lot, this is not going to be that, but it's going to be a little reflection on the state of the podcast too. And I know that that one was kind of a state of the podcast thing, but it's also going to be introducing some new ideas as well in a pretty pint-sized episode format, or we'll see when it's done. Editing VOD here. So, not quite as pint size as initially intended or thought through, but I do think that everything here actually works pretty well. So, you know, there is a little bit longer reflection on the show itself and everything like that, but I think it's purposeful. But I'm saying now, and you'll hear, I think the show's in a really great spot, and I'm happy with it, so listen to that. And I think that the exploration into the game, which will get brought up shortly as well, is a good one too. So, not super pint size, but also didn't make me feel all sorts of weird, kind of crazy despair or anything like that, like the last one did.
Nonetheless, just kind of want to chat for a minute and then kind of do a little bit of an exploration into a game. I wouldn't call it a deep dive by any stretch of the imagination, because again, this isn't going to be super long, but it's going to be looking at a game. And up front, I'll just say that the game that I'm thinking about and we'll be talking about for a little bit is Radlands, the two-player kind of card dueling game by Roxley. Full credits in a little bit when we introduce that game. But again, it's going to be kind of a vessel to ask some questions and talk about some things that are on my mind, hopefully in a way that can also lead to some future episodes with real guests too. So in short, I'm actually pretty excited for this one. Obviously, I like talking to people and hearing their thoughts more than delivering rambling soliloquies or whatever it is that you would want to call this. But nonetheless, we'll kind of get into it right now. Thank you. So before we get into that, I do want to do a little bit of front loading with some administrative types of things regarding the podcast. First and foremost, I wanted to deliver the biggest thank you. So if you're listening to these words right now, it means that you've listened to the podcast. It means that you trust the episodes that I've been, you know, kind of creating. Obviously, like I've mentioned already, it is all the guests. But I try to put different spins on it and make it what it is. But again, if you're listening to me right now, it means that you see something in what's going on, and you're looking forward to what's going to be coming on later in the episode, and then hopefully in future episodes too, circling back to this one a little bit. So again, biggest thing that I could thank anybody for doing for this podcast is listening. I have an RSS kind of subscription thing, which coming into doing a podcast, I didn't really know a ton about the best platforms or anything like that, but working through that site and being able to upload and have the ease and the things that it provides have been really, really nice. And it shows me where the show is being listened to, you know, all across the world, and kind of blows my mind. Obviously, I'm not the biggest show out there at all, but I think, you know, due to the fact that there are so many interesting people sharing their thoughts on the show, you know, somebody might see it and be like, oh wow, you have this person on the podcast. I definitely want to listen to it. And, you know, again, extreme gratitude, 100% gratefulness for that. So with that, you know, kind of the only request that I would have at this time is if you do like it, if you could, you know, just share it. If you know that, you know, your friend, family member, whoever likes a particular game, designer, somebody in board game, media, reviews, no matter what it is that I've talked to, and you think they would like listening to an episode that you enjoyed, just sharing it with them, and hopefully they like that as well. And then obviously some of the kind of, you know, liking, rating, reviewing types of things, if you just want to drop, well, whatever star rating you feel is appropriate, or writing some words, you know, again, that's all I would be super appreciated. I'm not 100% sure how that works, but I think the more ratings or the more liked, I would assume that would increase visibility to a degree too. So again, if you do that, that would be super appreciated. Every episode since the past reflection episode has had the feedback form, and like I said, I made some changes to the show based on that feedback form. So one of the things that I was kind of talked about for a second is the fact that the intro sound of just saying
intertextual cardboard experience
is definitely shorter than it used to be, and I'm still, you know, looking to change that too. But right now, I think that is a very functional stand-in introduction for the show, and I just got to communicate. I honestly went onto the forum and reached out to the people who provided some feedback there, and there was actually, you know, a drawing with that, so got to send out some games, and that was fun. Took a look at some of the things I was contemplating parting ways with, and looked at some BGG collections and tried to curate sending out stuff based on that. And again, just good communication all the way around, and it was a fun thing to connect with our listeners in that way. So if you haven't done that, it exists, and you take a look at that, and I will, you know, do the same and send some type of response for sure. And additionally, we'll probably use that as a means for any type of future giveaway, whether that is games going goodbye from my collection, or hopefully some other things that I might, you know, create in the future as well. That is the form. It's a Google form, very simple, but it works for me. The final thing, and again, this is kind of, you know, like, well, a new current thing as well as a hopeful future thought, and the hopeful future thought is going to be quite the endeavor. So no timetable for that, but we'll get to that in a second. So the current new thing that I did was create a buy me a coffee page. I guess it would be, you know, like a little fundraiser support type of thing. And in a similar vein to Patreon, I actually never really even looked into Patreon. So I think the name of Buy Me a Coffee and the general simplicity sold me on that. So, you know, not in this for any type of real money making to any degree, but it's kind of one of those things where if you like it and you want to support in that way, I mean, zero expectations, but that's going to always exist. And you know, right now, I think in terms of like having a Patreon and a type of subscription, wasn't really looking into having any type of content or, you know, anything like that be, you know, extra for any type of subscribers. I kind of just want this show and whatever this project turns into and everything like that be what it is and be one piece, as incoherent and rambly and just generally as eclectic as the name and or I am in the first place let it be. I just kind of want it to come together in those ways and not have, you know, extra episodes, maybe something like what this one would be, like locked, but that is what it is. So if you want to support with a buy me a coffee, that'd definitely help with the aforementioned RSS subscription thing. So I mean, again, I don't know if it's a necessity, but everything that I have been working with that has been really helpful to me. As far as Zoom subscription, you know, too, you know, that's something that it's the way that I get to talk to the guests, and it makes it really great in general as well, getting to see them and connect with them and then just record those episodes as well. And, you know, I want to make this as good as I possibly can. So I think I have a pretty nice computer. I have a functional webcam. Would probably want to get a better one and potentially get more equipment for, you know, other projects as well. And, you know, that's all going to be kind of like future peripheral stuff that is linked to the show and other things that I'm going to be creating too, that I think hopefully make the things kind of come full circle and make sense in that way too. So again, number one thing is definitely just, you know, thank you so much for listening, but all those other things in terms of liking, rating, reviewing, or this newest Buy Me Coffee, which will just always kind of be hanging out in the background, would be a kind of like a cherry on top. So again, thanks bunch, and that is kind of it for the request. But I mentioned future plans, and then I'll talk about a process related thing for a minute and then get to what this is, what this actual episode is about. So one of the things that I've been kicking around, actually no pun intended, is a Kickstarter or GameFound. Honestly, for shows and channels, I think Kickstarter is that route. So this is in the beyond infancy of the plan, but I would like to potentially, you know, reach out with kind of some promo related things and or just get a little crafty myself and making some like merch or pins, buttons, what have you, things that would be fun for any gamer and potentially just this show as well. But there's actually a lot of thoughts that I have for that right now, but again, there's really nothing going on there. And part of the thing that there's not going on, and you're hearing this episode as well, is that this is just like my absolute crazy busy season. Spring's tough for me. Currently teaching and coaching a co-head coach for track and field. But just between being there all the time, doing a lot of the admin and communication for that, I'm pretty particular when it comes to, you know, sending emails, being communicative. So even when I've been home for like the past month or so, it's not like I'm really even home, and it's maybe a couple few hours before that cycle starts up again. My head is kind of always on the work stuff. So this hasn't necessarily fallen by the wayside or anything like that. This is, you know, always on my mind as much as I can let it be. But, you know, setting up interviews and everything like that is tough. I think I mentioned early on that I was considering having this be set up in season. So I guess kind of the joke of this being not a part of the main season is linked to the fact that I think, at least now, I want it to be going forward. So whether it's a mini break like this, which the next episode you're going to be hearing is not another mini break. It'll be coming out in a week or 2 weeks, still kind of figuring out some, you know, conversations and scheduling in that regard to make sure that there are, you know, at least a few episodes between this and kind of like the season pause, because the season pause for me is pretty real at this point in time with the way that spring is going until, you know, early mid-June for sure. But you know, really good stuff coming up on the show, and I couldn't be more excited for that. I couldn't, you know, be happier with the episodes that I've had as well. But I'm okay with taking this as a little reflection and pause, as opposed to just kind of like putting the season on stop. And I know that there's different ways I could, you know, go about it. I could kind of set up a lot of stuff and then record them and have them come out for sure. That'd be like a really real possibility. But I think just the way I plan, the way I work, and the way that things have kind of set up, I like the flow overall. And obviously having it be bi-weekly, I mean, if it was weekly, it wouldn't be possible in the first place, but having it be bi-weekly kind of allows me, or has allowed me, to play things, play games, watch shows, you know, actually start to read a little bit more. But again, right now, reading is kind of like the final thing I'm able to do throughout the course of the day. And sometimes I can stick it out for, you know, 20 minutes. Sometimes it's two and my eyes are already shut. But coming up with new ideas to talk about guests and everything like that as well is just the way that my brain is working. So I was actually, you know, writing out some thoughts for this episode and kind of like this administrative stuff and for what the future, like the second part of this is going to be too. And I wrote down all these guests, you know, people that are linked to other people that I've talked to, you know, designers that I've played their games or own games and want to play more of, you know, and it's over 30. And that was just like a very, very short list. Some people have been in communication with and set up things in the future at some point in time. Some people I haven't, you know, reached out to at all because I haven't, you know, played a particular game enough, or I just haven't played at all and I want to talk to them, or I really want to read something and talk to somebody about that book and how that links to, you know, their work then too. So again, that's kind of like where I'm at with the planning and everything. And I think it's been good. Like I said, you know, a weird, not even a snag, but just a briefest of pause before your regularly scheduled programming returns to you. But knowing that between now and mid-June, maybe there'll be another one of these little follow-ups, or maybe once getting this out of the way and getting to that later will lead to the things that I think it can actually lead to then too. Okay, final couple things, just talking about the show, is the fact that I've done just some new things, some new touches that I've really liked. So after talking to Bridget in episode 14, Bridget created a really awesome text for that episode, and that wound up being the episode's image. So then for episode 15 with Luis, and then 16 with Ruel, I wound up making something. Obviously, it doesn't look like a professionally, or something that's created by a professional for that episode image, but it just adds a little bit of touch, and I think that's been fun. Kind of mentioned it in that episode 16 with Ruel that I have started to change the adjectives to introduce the guests. So Ruel was my sweet 16th guest. And one final kind of touch that I've added, and I guess this is where the show is going to start becoming a clip episode, because I'm going to be inserting two clips from previous episodes, is I've been changing a word in the outro. So I say, thank you for listening to Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most. And then I'm pretty sure the word was always eclectic, but now it is changed to something depending on the episode. So for episode 15 with Luis, it is
the most
Tetris
podcast.
And for the one with Ruel, I won't clip that one just because I, oh, you know what? I'm going to clip that one too. Clip episode.
The most
wordy
podcast.
But yeah, all in all, you know, fun little touches, I think, are just adding to some of the personality of each episode. And that's my ultimate goal. I want to, you know, no matter like what it is, no matter how long the conversation goes, or you know, I really want to just make it kind of turbo specific, and then just having the show notes and everything like that then too. All right, so now we are moving on to this of the episode, with a lot of that administrative and requesty type of stuff in the rear view mirror. And this is this kind of like mini focus. So today's episode is, well, this is a vodcast. So me, you're stuck with me. Thank you for sticking with me for this. And it's going to be exploring a couple things. So this is vodcasts : Apocalands / Duel. And you know, for me, I can kind of highlight some games that I love. There are so many games that I love, and this isn't necessarily, you know, like a favorite game of mine. I probably, based on how much I've played it and how much I think about it, even in what I just kind of checked as a pretty big break between the last time I played it and then me just playing it the past week, because, well, it's been on my mind so much, and I was thinking about talking about it anyway for some time for this talk. I think, you know, I think it's a top 20 game. I really am struck by a lot of elements of it, and if you've listened to the show in any capacity, you kind of know that dueling games are for me. So Radlands, and how good it is, no real surprise that I like it. So I want to kind of talk about the game. I kind of want to talk about perhaps other texts in different mediums, and just doing these little mini explorations. So yeah, with that said, I think that this is going to wind up bringing more questions. I'm not going to say, oh, this is great because X, Y, and Z. I'll say some of the things that stuck out to me, some of the things that I've just been thinking about. But then hopefully some of these questions are ones that I can wind up expanding upon in conversation with other guests. So, you know, I spend a lot of time creating the questions for all the guests, and perhaps by doing this, I can, in this free form, like I said before, soliloquy, me rambling at the camera where I'm showing, where my face is showing itself to me, and just talking at a screen can wind up just like manifesting into something else. And, you know, I've got my notes up, and mostly, honestly, not even a ton of notes, because, you know, like I said, I didn't really think that I was going to be answering any questions. I think I'm just going to be putting some thoughts out there and thinking about this game. So first things first, this idea of Apocalands, or apocalyptic fiction, or post-apocalyptic fiction, as what I would probably define as a genre. So that's one of the things that I've kind of been thinking about. I mean, you know, for the longest time, I know that there are other people who can say it in much better ways than me, kind of push back against the word theme in games when it's not used perhaps the most appropriately. And so, like, an animal themed or nature themed game, or an alien themed game, space themed game, like those types of things. I mean, in different contexts, I think people use the word in that way, you know, like a theme for a party or something like that. But, you know, I think from what I've seen, heard, read, kind of digesting from people who are not using theme for board games in that way, is the fact that, you know, books have themes, and movies have themes, and songs have themes, and it's not necessarily linked to, you know, the setting or the genre or anything like that. So that's probably why they don't use them in the game. So again, I'm not going to try to answer that question, especially because I didn't write my thoughts for something like that. So if I did, I think it'd be a lot more coherent than what if I just like ramble about it. But, you know, when I was talking to Dan Thoreau, it was brought up from him in a pretty small snippet that wasn't even necessarily, you know, about that idea of the way we use theme when we talk about games, but I'll insert that clip here. And that's something that, well, after I add another clip, I will probably move on from a little bit, but maybe reference it and potentially revisit that discussion in the future with, well, maybe Dan, somewhere down the line, and or other people too.
That you can read the rule book, and the rule book might have disclaimers in it, or explain the topic that the game is about, or clarify that what we would call the theme. Some people would call it the theme of the board game, and not me, but some people.
Okay, so now with that thought out of the way, I personally wouldn't, you know, call Radlands a post-apocalyptic or apocalyptic themed game, or I think even people might say like Mad Max themed or Mad Max inspired, which probably inspired is going to make a little bit more sense. So when I'm thinking about the theme of the game, I'm wondering, honestly, since I have kicked that thought around in my head for some time, you know, what it might be. Is it going to be, you know, that idea of, you know, despair due to, you know, scarcity of resources, you know, conflicts, you know, why are the conflicts that, you know, obviously being forced due to these like lack of resources and anger amongst different groups over territories, things like that. But I don't know, there's some clashing there too, because, you know, one of the reasons that I like the game so much, and we'll get into a second, is some of the little, you know, stories that it creates. And I think that's what dueling games can do well if they are, in fact, done well. Wind up being a little, you know, humorous. And I think the art style makes it a little bit more cartoonish. And it's not to say that things that have a more cartoon vibe to them cannot approach the serious, but I don't know. There's some clashing. So we'll kind of take a pause on that as well and think about the game for just a second. All right, full credits time. So Radlands, released in 2021 by designer Daniel Pichnik. There's going to be some mispronunciations in here, with artist Lina Cassette, Damien Mammoliti, and Manny Tremblay, published by Roxley. Looking at some of the, with graphic designer Guy Landgraf, some of the categories that we have are card game, fighting, science fiction, mechanism, action points, action queue, hand management, take that, and variable player powers. I guess, yeah, camps, cards, you can kind of set it up in that way. Okay, so that's a nice quick Board Game Geek overview of those credits. So if you want to take a look at them and see how poorly that I did pronounce those names, A, my apologies, and B, go for it. So I've had a history with, you know, kind of dueling card games. Apocalands Duel as the title for this segment. And honestly, my biggest blind spot, if you listen to the very first episode with John Cloudus, is the fact that I really haven't played much Magic the Gathering. I've played a little bit on the online implements, so, you know, Arena, I think, is one of them. There's another one too. So at the core, you know, I think I get it, but it's even been such a long time that it's hard for me to say, yeah, I get it, or no, I don't. But nonetheless, I've played a lot of the digital CCGs and Hearthstone, Runeterra, and one that actually kind of subverts some of the things that I'm going to be bringing up here as well in Marvel Snap, which, hey, I immediately after that conversation, or, you know, within a couple days, even quicker than I said I was going to, when I was talking with John Perry about it for a second, I did wind up deleting it. I've moved on for the time being, and things have been good there. But I've kind of done my time, and, you know, when it comes to board games, then I think I do gravitate towards, you know, those types. So a lot of John Cloudus's games. I've played a little bit of Summoner Wars, second edition now, and others, which, well, haven't written down, but again, grand majority there are going to be with John's games and Radlands here. So, you know, to me, there are different ways that these games can work. Oh yeah, and now that I'm thinking about it too, Wizards of the Grimoire as another interesting entry into that category as well. But, you know, in these games, you can make your opponent lose health, whether this is health to, you know, a base, core, nexus, character, you know, whatever it might be. That is kind of a main one. Like you're trying to deal damage and get them down to zero. It could be flipped where you're trying to get to a certain amount of points. And with that, things are kind of, you know, it's a chief differentiation. So in games where you can lose your health, typically you would have the ability to regain that health, to heal. Where, you know, again, I'm not an expert, and I'm not really trying to answer anything. So this is a good question then too, is in games where you're trying to like get to a certain like point threshold, you know, there might be things that your opponent can do to like throw in your way as obstacles to your engine or your point generating cards or whatever it might be, but typically not decreasing from where you're at. I mean, because if that's the case, might as well just have it be in a losing health and healing aspect then too, or there could be other objectives as well. So in the case of, you know, Radlands, the objectives would be destroying your opponent's camps. And there are three of them, each of them being able to withstand 2 damage, provided they are not healed. So that in itself is one thing that I, you know, quite like about Radlands. It's a game that just re-explaining the rules, kind of internalizing the rules, being able to teach them, it winds up being like a pretty straightforward game. And I think the way that everything is set up, and here's a production note. I don't think that I've really actually talked a ton about production in regards to a lot of games, but I think I have the, you know, Turbo Deluxe version of this with the cards being different and the little tokens and then the playmats. I feel like if you're playing it without that stuff, you're completely fine. But, you know, it does do some good work in regards to the graphic design and kind of showing some of the, you know, smaller rules or just kind of like denoting things visually for you to just help out. And, you know, having, I mean, obviously you can, you know, tap or flip cards, and that's not the craziest thing, but having it spaced out, I don't know. I think it's nice. And I think the reference card does some solid work as well. So in the game of Radlands, you have your three bases, which you are both trying to protect and use while employing / deploying people or events, getting your Raiders card out there in order to slip past the defenses and just make your opponent choose which camp they want to damage, all the while managing the previously mentioned scarce resource of water. Water is your action points. You get a default of 3 of them to start. And, you know, there are different things that you can do to get more. But, you know, depending on the way that you do want to use them, you might use all 3 to put out a card. You might be kind of like stuck and not have anything to do, and you might have a water to buy a card that gives you another water in the future for a potentially bigger turn. There's a lot to like from this game mechanically in my opinion, but, you know, kind of thinking about the different ways in which you can win dueling card games, and having this one be focused on the camps, I think to me, you know, in my experience, gives it a little bit different of a feel. So, you know, you have to consider the tempo. You have to consider the ability to restore cards. You have to understand that there really aren't a ton of cards in that deck that give the restore ability. You know, some of them are able to do it through the junk action, and with, you know, well, knowing that water is a scarce resource, cards can be a scarce resource too, depending on like how many you want to put out, how many you want to protect your camps. So if you put them out in front of your camps, the camp becomes protected. If you put out another person in front of a previously placed person, that person is protected. But there are different things that can happen to make them you know, unprotected or circumvent their protection and things like that. And, you know, that's where the game is, obviously. I mean, you know, there are cards that have like a little bit of text on them. You got events. You got the card here, Vigilante. I'm showing it to the camera. Nobody can see it. This is a card that costs you one water to put out. And another thing is cards enter play. Okay, typically there are things that can happen to make your cards enter play ready, but your cards are going to enter play not ready. You're going to pay them, put the water that you spent on your card to denote that they are unusable until, you know, your next turn when you pull your water back. So Vigilante costs one. There's no other text on the card or written text. There are visual cues in the Vigilante's iconography that if instead of playing the Vigilante, you were going to put them into the discard pile and junk them, that would either get your raiders into your event queue or push your raiders forward, which is good. Raiders is a strong option for certain. If and when your Vigilante is ready, you can pay one water to damage a person. So again, you know, there's no written text outside of the name, but there's a lot that that card can do. And, you know, one cost, not the most expensive, but both other options on that card are very viable. And again, in terms of protection, getting them out there, there are a lot of things to balance. Just for the sake of not, you know, ruining myself, I have not scoured the deck. I've played this game, I think, almost 10 times now, which isn't the most. I would have to assume that I've seen every card in the game played by my opponent or myself, but who knows? Maybe I haven't. Not everything is going to make its way, and if it gets junked, well, then it wouldn't have gotten played then either. But there are multiples of some cards. I don't know if there's multiples of every card. I don't know if, you know, the multiples just 2, 3. Don't know that exact composition, but that's fine. Like I said, I think a lot of the fun is in that initial discovery, seeing some of the things that the cards can do, but it's a set deck. So one of the things about this game is you have these cards, and I'll see if I can not have this take super long forever, but you have these cards, and the draw deck has at least listed here 46 person cards and 20 event cards. So the draw deck is going to be, you know, 66 with like I said, some repeats in there. If we're thinking about variety or replayability, a lot of that is going to come in, you know, the way that they do come out. Some of that's going to be coming from the camps themselves, which do have variable powers. They have, if some seem a little bit stronger, they might give you, you know, less cards. So you have like starting cards. So you have to see like how many cards you're going to be getting from that initial draw based on your camps too. So again, a lot of balancing acts. I like games that give those types of considerations too, for sure. But, you know, I think the real hero, as I mentioned, is the stories. So this is something that, you know, it's so far in the past with me, but this is the thing that has stuck out to me the most about this game. And honestly, I couldn't even tell you the full sequence, but it revolved around the card Mutant. And Mutant, if you believe it or not, is not the most beautiful character. I mean, I guess maybe. I think that the mutant's beautiful in its own ways, but you've got this large purple creature with drool kind of spilling out of its mouth and a half-gnawed bone in hand with these big, long, pointy fingernails and kind of like long hair from up top, but very thin too. So, well, nonetheless, mutant is going to make its way into the episode image. And for the mutant, I had the mutant in my card. I like the functionality of this card. So you pay one, and for the mutant, you can damage anything for zero cost, and or heal, then you would damage this card. So, you know, obviously the drawback is that you are damaging the card, which if the card is damaged, then you can't use it because then they're not ready. So there was a sequence played where I think I may have had two rescue teams, which we'll read the rescue team. You pay one for the rescue team, and for zero cost, you get to return one of your people to your hand, and then punks. This is a reminder here that punks, just the back of the cards, which are, you know, single health point, good for protection, can be employed for protection in different ways, and then can also re-enter your hand and then be played for whatever is on the, you know, front side of the card, whether that is a person or an event. And yeah, so you get to return one of the people to your hand, and the card enters play ready. So you get to, well, I'm going to use the word thematically, and I'll get to that just in 1 second in one of my kind of final wrap-up thoughts, because I think we're starting to get there. You get to have this card enters play ready. So, you know, mutants out there dealing damage, healing, and as I mentioned, there's not a ton of healing options in the game, so very, very valuable, but you get hurt. So you don't want to be out there hurt, because one more hurt winds up having you, you know, discarded, eliminated from your little play area. So mutant, beautiful mutant out there doing mutant work, and then throwing rescue team out there, bringing mutant back into hand. It was just a string, and I know that there was another play because mutant kept getting saved and healed and became a, you know, a focal point of my offense in that game. And just that between my friend and I was just so funny, and eventually, through a pretty concerted effort, mutant was no longer anymore. But, you know, I think if we're going back to conversation one, episode one, that I had with John, and, you know, we talked about cards kind of doing what you'd expect them to do, and how that's kind of, you know, a hallmark of good card games. I think that's being done here. And again, you know, a lot of those other games that I've played and liked and loved and perhaps burned out on, and now I'm realizing at this point, talking about some of the differences between dueling games in person and dueling games online is definitely going to be a part of future conversation, because, you know, I've got some thoughts on that, and, well, I've maxed out where this episode's going to be going in my mind, and that's okay. You know, this game is doing it, and, you know, whether it's just a very brief power, like rescue team, just returning one of your people to your hand and having that be something that you can sneak in and do right away, whereas most cards can't, like, that's a cool card. You know, makes sense. You see the image on that card and what it's doing, and you're able to create these little cinematic experiences. The way that the cards are interacting, and just the way the game plays, it's quick. It can get drawn out a little bit, like I've seen it, but I don't think that it overstays its welcome. You can definitely, you know, try to clog your board, which is going to protect things, but you know, and heal. But with healing being a limited resource, as long as you're able to get your raiders out there and do some other things to clear away and maneuver and outmaneuver and just play with that singular deck of cards, knowing some of the options that are in there, exploring some others, seeing, you know, these mini combos playing out, or these little synergies working together between your cards and your camps or your people in your camps. I don't know. Doing a lot with which, as far as I know, in the non-deluxe version is just that deck of cards. You know, a huge, huge recommendation. And, you know, while I mentioned thinking about the setting, thinking about, you know, maybe some of that humor and the joy in what is otherwise kind of a bleak setting, maybe that's a juxtaposition that I will continue, you know, pondering, but not necessarily, you know, negatively. I don't know. The game's been on my mind. Seeing Dune 2 and seeing Fade Roytha and the way that Fade and his followers and whatever is going on there was giving me some, you know, Mad Max cultist feelings, and knowing that there's the new one coming out this year, and knowing the fact that I've never even seen the original ones from, as far as I know, the 80s, but playing the video games, not really being, you know, into that genre of fiction the most, but being more willing and kind of being there a little bit more too as of late has got these thoughts swirling. So, you know, all in all, maybe Apocalypse hasn't been the most explored, and I will want to revisit that. Maybe I'll watch all the original Mad Max movies and then Fury Road, and I think the new one is a Furiosa movie. Thinking about that, thinking about the video game, thinking about this game can add to the conversation. Revisiting some of the ideas that I talked about in some of the differences between the main objective, the way that they differ, and the way that can affect your play, and perhaps eventually getting into the difference of feel between playing against a random person online who you can't really interact with outside of, you know, sending emotes or pre-generated messages, depending on what that game is, and playing against a pal across the table whom you're probably presumably not going to be too angry at least I don't think I ever have been, and how that changes the experience and can almost make something that is, you know, dually and punchy and in your face a communal storytelling experience nonetheless. I don't know. So yeah, this is where things are wrapping up. Where my head is with it is in a pretty happy spot. I know that this was a long rambling episode, a little bit longer than I expected, but I think in future vodcasts, which again not going to be the norm, just a mini break here and what is a busy spring season, so perhaps another one, I would say at most, you know, two before end of June, but you know, finger crossed that scheduling and everything has it not be that. But you know, maybe even if like the schedule is great, maybe I have no issues, I'm ahead, so to say, and guests are set up for, you know, a couple months or a few months, I can even, you know, explore these ideas in a different way and talk about them. And again, any sort of feedback you can share with me. I'll continue to, you know, explore other things I'm doing with the podcast. I know that so many shows and things have Discord, which is kind of why I wouldn't even really consider that, but maybe there are ways that I can just make it be a little bit different too. End of the day, that's that's my goal. I wouldn't want to, you know, like put something out there just to have it like exist and not see what it could offer that something else wouldn't have done already for you. So, you know, right now, any sort of communication with me via my email in the contact information or that feedback form is really great for me. I like just like kind of meeting people and chatting and everything like that via written communication as well. But yeah, like I said, not like the last one where I got to the end. I'm like, wait, what the heck was that? Despite my rambling, I feel like this is starting to hit at questions, which I know that I'm not answering and I'm completely fine with not answering, but kind of shouting out a game in Radlands that I like quite a bit and have been thinking about a bit and just theme and setting and genre and dueling and apocalyptic stuff. It's not done. So this is a Apocalands duel, an initial exploration. So thank you so much for your time.
Intertextual Cardboard Experience, the most
dueling
podcast about board games and any other text that they connect to. Thank you so much for choosing to spend your time here. Any further support, such as sharing the show with friends, following the page's socials in the episode description, writing a review, filling out the feedback form, or doing anything else you can think of is greatly appreciated. Keep playing, watching, reading, listening, experiencing.